Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to be talking, among other things, about a recent study by the National Audubon Society. It shows that the welfare of birds is linked closely to the quality of food and shelter found in their habitats. And our guest, John Roden, joins us today, Director of Community Conservation for the National Audubon Society. We'll talk to him about the study, what we can do to create a bird-friendly environment. And they have a really cool new web database that will help you select plants that are native to your area. So what would you like to know about creating a bird-friendly yard? What helps you bring birds to your homes? Maybe you can join in with some comments along those lines. Join our conversation. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. John Roden, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Here's a sound that I think we all enjoy hearing. Let's see if we can get that up. The house finch. The house finch. It's a song that we love to hear, and there are many, many, many bird songs that we love to hear. But the Audubon Society's Birds and Climate Change Study has some findings that aren't necessarily positive. Talk about that study and why we want to keep hearing those bird songs.
Sure. So we did recently release a Birds and Climate Change report, which really analyzed how birds are already being affected by climate change and how that will continue even at low carbon scenarios through this century. And the bottom line is that over half of North America's bird species will be climate threatened or endangered, meaning that they'll lose 50% or more of their range, again, at low climate scenarios, low carbon scenarios through the century. And the ranges are shifting. Not necessarily going to have the habitat that they need over this time. And so really climate change is a really major threat to birds, and we want to obviously work in that space to combat climate change, both from an adaptation and mitigation standpoint, but then also provide people with ways that they can actually do better in their local patches to support birds.
Yeah. What geographic areas did you study? Pretty much the whole
country? Yes, it's the whole country, actually, and it's actually all of North America as we understand how climate change is affecting birds. So it's really the entire continent we're talking about.
And did you have some projections for, let's say, individual species of birds?
Absolutely. So we did an analysis of all species that are found in North America, and so that's where we came up with that. You know, that there is quite a large number of species that will be threatened by climate change. All of that information is available, including information on specific species that people may be interested in looking at on our website, audubon.org.
And so it's not a great situation. I know I read one of your pieces, and you were talking about the amount of lawns that we have, and the fact that we could do a lot right in our own backyard to help this.
Absolutely. Well, you know, so I think that, you know, we want to obviously present the science behind what we understand about how climate change will affect birds, but we also absolutely want to give people things that they can do. And so they can absolutely become advocates and supporters of the work that we're doing, and we encourage and really welcome people to do that and contact their elected officials, et cetera. But we also want to give them opportunities to just transform what they have control over in their yard or in their on their balcony or whatever. And you mentioned lawns, and, you know, I mean, the interesting thing is that turf grass really is the largest irrigated crop in the U.S. And so changing that paradigm even a little bit can really help birds by planting more native plants, which will benefit them.
Yeah, the study, I think it showed that bird welfare is really closely linked to the quality of food and shelter. So we can do a lot as individuals in that area.
Yes, absolutely. So within my realm in Audubon as Director of Community Conservation, I'm responsible for our bird-friendly communities conservation strategy, which looks to provide food, shelter, safe passage during migration, and places to raise young for birds. And native plants hit actually all of those needs that birds have by providing better food for them, both with regard to the food that's directly produced by those plants, be it, you know, nuts, seeds, or nectar, those sorts of direct resources that plants provide, but also by providing a home for insects. And when I say insects, I'm principally talking about things like caterpillars that butterflies and moths lay their eggs and they produce caterpillars. Those are incredibly important to birds when they're breeding. And so hitting that places to raise their young aspect of a bird-friendly community. And the reason for that is that 96% of terrestrial bird species feed those caterpillars to their young, and that's independent of what those adult birds eat. So whether they eat nectar as adults or seeds, they're actually feeding insects, those caterpillars, because those caterpillars are these fantastic packages of fat and protein that is just what a baby bird needs to grow and to reach fledging. So that's really why we're encouraging native plants, because native plants, because they've co-evolved with these insects, are actually great hosts for them. And the scientific basis behind all of this really draws a lot on the work of an entomologist named Doug Tallamy at the University of Delaware, who's really demonstrated that there's orders of magnitude difference between a number of caterpillars that are hosted on native plants versus non-native plants. So it's a very clear and direct relationship, and that's why these native plants really benefit our native bird species so strongly.
John and Roberts called in to ask how we address political leaders who don't believe in the existence of climate change.
Right. Well, you know, there's increasing scientific evidence about the effects of climate change. And, you know, we really at Audubon, birds are at our core and at our that's our bread and butter. And we really do at this, you know, as we're talking to political leaders, birds really are something that we can all come together around, we believe, right? So yeah. Our evidence that birds are really quite dramatically affected by climate change can be a starting point for those conversations. So up in your area, for example, the common loon, which is a state bird of Minnesota, will actually, under climate scenarios, no longer actually breed in Minnesota. So there will actually, you know, I think that everyone in that state, wherever you find yourself on the political spectrum or whatever you believe, does not want to see loons disappear. And so, again, coalescing around this type of just like let's work together to see that if we can actually protect these species where we find them now is really something that we think that everybody can come together over.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about your National Audubon Plants for Birds campaign. Mm-hmm. Give us some information on how that's run and how it's going.
Sure. So like I've mentioned, you know, native plants, we have a very clear understanding that they are better for our native bird species. And I will, you know, sort of drill down into that a little bit more. As I've mentioned, birds feed those caterpillars to the young, and they need literally thousands of those caterpillars to get their chicks to fledging. So one of the things that we want to do is to provide information to people on what native plants are local to their area. So you mentioned we have a database, and we've launched that to support the program. It's, again, at our website, audubon.org. And all people need to have, the only piece of information they need is their zip code. They type in their zip code, and they'll get a list of the plants that are native to their local area. They'll get the birds that are supported by those plants based on the resources that those plants provide. And they'll also get information on local support, their local Audubon, that can be a great source of information to support them in any sort of questions they have about transforming their space, as well as local retailers that carry native plants. And so we really wanted to provide a wealth of information, and all you need is your zip code to help support people if they're thinking about how they might transform even a portion of their patch into more bird-friendly habitat.
I was on the site. It is an absolutely amazing site. Where did you get all the information from for it? It's amazing.
Yes, thank you. It's been really, really a labor to pull all this together. We partnered with the Biota of North America program, which is based in North Carolina, which has a lot of the plant range data down to that very specific level. So we actually, that brings our plant range data in. And then we pulled our native plant and bird expertise from around our Audubon network. And we have a really extensive network of native plant experts through our over 400 chapters, 43 nature centers around the country to help us actually narrow what plants are the best for birds. And we then have pulled all together the information based on, you know, what retailers can carry native plants. It's a dynamic process, and we've been working on this for several years now to continue to refine that information that we can then help support users all over the U.S. to transform their patch.
Yeah, it's a jaw dropper. I looked at that, that must have taken thousands of hours to put that all together. Oh, my goodness.
That is true. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate hearing that you can appreciate that, because it really has been an intense labor, and it's ongoing, right? We're continuing to refine that and to, again, reflect, as the optimal and the best data that we have out to people around the country.
John Roden, our guest, Director of Community Conservation for the National Audubon Society. Well, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's take a call. Christy in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Thank you for calling, Christy. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Well, this is a very exciting program. My home is surrounded by all natives, and the plants are so prolific that friends and family have taken plants here and started their own. My question is, around my home are three large green ash trees and provide wonderful shade. They were recently treated by a certified arborist for emerald ash borer with the amanitin benzoate. And my question is now, after the fact, do I need to worry about that chemical and the birds feeding on the insects from the ash trees? Thank you.
Yeah. Got any idea about that one, John?
Sure. So first of all, Christy, thank you for that, and thank you for the work that you've done transforming your yard. It's great to hear that and actually spreading that message to your friends and family as well. It's really great to know. So the chemical used to treat emerald ash borer is meant to be specific to that. So I wouldn't worry too much about the effect, the follow-on effect to other species. But it's great to be conscious of those sorts of things. You know, one of the things that we encourage, or one of the great things about native plants is that they don't require the use of pesticides generally. So it's actually yet one more benefit to having native plants, is that they actually reduce our use of pesticides in the landscape. So that's one more reason for them. Definitely be conscious of those things when pesticides are applied for whatever reason. You need to be conscious of that. But you should be okay in this particular case.
John Roden, Director of Community Conservation for the National Audubon Society. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at native plants for birds, things that you can do in your own yard to help create a better habitat for the birds that you want to attract to your yard. Our guest today, again, from the National Audubon Society, John Roden. He directs community conservation for the Audubon Society. Questions for him, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Paul in Grafton emailed to say there's a wild cherry tree in his yard. He often sees cedar waxwings eating the cherries in the fall. He almost never sees them in the spring, summer, even though he will see them when he walks his dog in the park just 3 miles east. Why is that, do you think?
That's interesting. Well, before that last bit, I was going to say, you know, certainly while the when there's a large amount of food available, the cedar waxwings and other birds will, you know, you won't see them in large densities necessarily at the fruiting trees. And as time passes and there's those resources are more concentrated, that's why you'll see them. So I'm not sure why he would see them in certain areas and not others when there's actually this, you know, we're talking about the same species. I mean, it could just be maybe there's additional resources that are closer to those that are concentrating the birds over in those areas. And then as they deplete those resources, then they'll expand out. I'd have to see what would be the specifics of that area to know exactly.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, the cherries, they're ripened in the fall, and there's probably, he may not have other food sources for cedar wax wings that are as good as the ones that are 3 miles east of where he lives. And that is probably why. I mean, they're just following the food around a little bit.
So, sure, exactly, yeah. So where the best resources are, certainly we'll concentrate them. Yep.
So, Paul, if you wanted to see more of those cedar wax wings, you could go to the National Audubon Society. How do we do that again? Just go to the website?
Yes, exactly. So on our audubon.org website, you just go to the Plants for Birds section, and then that will connect you through the database. And one thing I can tell you about that, too, is like you say, if you're particularly interested in types of birds like cedar waxwings or birds that feed on berries, we have filtering functions, and so you can actually narrow down the type of search that you're doing. So if you're interested in supporting particular types of birds, or if you want to select types of plants that provide nectar, say, so you're particularly interested in birds that feed on nectar like hummingbirds, you can really narrow your search to try and focus on what you're interested in.
And along with just putting in your zip code.
Exactly, right. Your zip code is all you need to actually enter into the database. But then from there, you can certainly use the filtering functions, et cetera, to narrow down what you're interested in finding.
Let's take some more calls. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Steve in Marshfield up next. Steve, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I am responsible for managing some grazing lands in the Marshfield area, and based on some past information I had seen, we've delayed our mowing until July 1st of each year to try to maintain habitat for ground nesting birds, though I do get a little bit of flack from supervisors and other people in the area about leaving those grazing areas long. So I'm wondering if there's anywhere I could get more information on the types of birds in this area that we might be protecting habitat for, or more evidence that delaying mowing might be good for these species.
All right, good question. What do you think, John?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that question, and thanks for doing that work. It's absolutely true that ground nesting birds, which, you know, utilize our grasslands across the country for raising their young, are one of the guilds of birds that are really under threat for just those reasons, right? That those lands are actually disturbed or mowed when the birds are trying to produce their young. So there definitely is scientific evidence that support that management approach. So I applaud you on that, and I can actually, if you want, connect through Larry to you to help provide some of those resources if you want, as well as what types of birds would actually be directly benefited by that, because there are a number of ground nesting songbirds that and game birds as well that use those areas for producing young. So certainly we can provide that support, but it is absolutely a great management practice for delaying mowing is a great management practice for those lands.
John, can Steve perhaps email you or contact you somehow through the Audubon website?
Sure, he's welcome to email me. My email's not available through the website, but I can certainly give it to you and provide it to him.
Sure, that'd be wonderful if you can do that. And I'm thinking about some of the researchers here at the University of Wisconsin. Emeritus Professor Stan Temple, I believe, in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, and others in that department have done research on that, and he might even connect with the UW Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology for some information on that as well. So, Steve, there's some help out there, and if you want to shoot me an email, we can make sure that John gets it for you. Thanks a lot for calling. Kel in Sugar Camp, it's your turn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's a little off subject, but I wanted to know what have wind farms done and what are they doing to reduce bird kill in the fall and spring migrations?
John, are you up on that?
The question is about wind farms, what they've done?
Yeah, are they, what is being done to mitigate potential loss of birds that are migrating with, you know, through areas where there are wind farms?
Sure, sure. So, I mean, this is a big and complicated question, right? And certainly, you know, as we think about climate change, wind is one of the sustainable sources of energy that we are promoting. One of the things that obviously needs to be taken into account is the siting of those wind farms. So where they're sited and also the height of them and those sorts of issues. I think that this is a big question, and certainly we at Audubon are very concerned about that. I don't think that there's any sort of silver bullet solution to it, particularly in previously sited wind farms that may occur in areas where there are migratory birds that are funneling through there. But I think that as we move forward, siting them properly and actually taking into account where the birds are and what their needs are incredibly important. So from a standpoint of previously sited wind farms, that's something that I'm not really 100% up on, but certainly that's an issue that we're concerned about.
Yeah. And there are things that can be done. I said the newer wind farms and so forth, there are things that they're doing to try to mitigate that, aren't they? I believe so.
Absolutely, yes. And as our understanding increases over time about the effects of wind and turbines, we can do a better job at actually siting them properly. And also, again, the height of them, the lighting on them, because that can be a challenge for night migrating birds. So all of that is feeding into our understanding and how we actually then can support the wind as an alternative energy, but also do it effectively to protect birds.
Kel, thanks a lot for calling. Kurt in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Kurt. Thank you for calling.
Hey, no problem. I just wanted to comment on a previous caller.
Okay.
Who was talking about the cedar waxwings, and you know, just like all migratory birds, in the spring and summer, they're paired up and spread out. And that particular bird, I know what he's referring to. I had an ash tree or a mountain ash tree with those orange berries.
Yeah,
and I've had, oh, I don't want to say hundreds, but I've certainly dozens of cedar waxwings come in the fall and hammer those down, and it's just a fall thing. You know, they're getting ready to store some fat to head wherever they go. It's not, I don't know if you can really plan on attracting them in the spring with one cherry tree, you know.
Yeah. Probably right about that, isn't he, John?
Yeah, absolutely. So they certainly are more dispersed when certainly they're, you know, establishing and maintaining breeding territories and raising their young. And there's lots more resources then, right, during the spring and summer. And like you say, they're concentrated during the fall. It's we ha- have that. I mean, that's a great phenomenon when we see large groups of cedar waxwings coming and just really taking advantage of those fruiting trees where there's a lot of resources. And we see that all over the country. And that what a beautiful bird to actually see in large groups. So yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Kurt, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments. Get you on pretty quickly here. The number's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. I'm wondering on this database, relatively, it's pretty new, but what, are you getting pretty good use from it so far? I mean, are a lot of people going to it?
Yeah, absolutely. We've actually had really good response to it, which is really gratifying to see. And, you know, taking a step back, the reason that we pulled the type of information we're reflecting out to users in our database is we did a survey of our members, what they would need to actually transform their yards into more bird-friendly habitat. And it was information on their native plants, local native plants, what types of birds they would support, and what types of local resources could support them. So that's why we really responded to that need with this. And we've been, since we launched it, which has been, you know, really about a year and a half at this point, we've had hundreds of thousands of people participate and actually use the database. We have a little form that people can fill out and send us, you know, pictures of their yards and what, you know, what sort of experience they've had in that sort of transformation. So we've had a really tremendous response to it, and I'm thrilled that people all over the country are actually using it and transforming their patch. Oh, and I should say as well that it's you don't need a yard necessarily to actually use our database or to actually use native plants. If you live in an apartment, you have a balcony or a fire escape, you can put out native plants. And, you know, the interesting thing, there's data that show that insects will be able to find those native plants, and then birds will as well. And so, of course, it's better when there's connectivity in habitat, but even small patches of habitat can have benefits for birds.
I was just thinking about my own home where I have native plants in between. There's a, I don't know how wide that strip is, maybe 3 or 3 feet or 3.5 feet, something like that. I have native plants between the sidewalk and the street. And it looked very attractive, I think, when they're blooming. And it certainly does seem to help. I've got a bird bath out there, too. And it does seem to help attract.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, it's even small patches can have a benefit. And, you know, I live in Los Angeles, so it's quite a different habitat here. The same thing that you've described, and have a patch of between the sidewalk and the street. And we have out here, you know, native sages and California lilacs, et cetera. And I actually look out of my office and I see hummingbirds. I see lots of bees and butterflies on our plants. And it's such a great thing to see that. It just brings so much joy to my life.
Yeah. John in Mineral Point is back to cedar waxwings again. They're eating insects in the summer, and then in the fall, they convert to berries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, one of the things, there's birds that do shift their the focus of their diet over time, and that's, you know, largely probably due to availability, right? So the insects certainly aren't going to be available during the fall and are available more readily during the spring and summer. So some of that may be related to the fact that they're actually then, again, feeding them to their young, and so they're actually foraging for them more ardently. So, yes, but there are birds that do switch around their diet.
Jim emailed to say a month or two ago there were several Baltimore Orioles in his neighborhood, and his neighbor claims there's still a couple around. He's had oranges out but hasn't seen any for weeks, wondering why that might be the case.
Yeah, so it's so hard to predict where birds will be, even if they're around, whether you're going to be able to attract them with specific things. It's great that you're providing those resources. You know, certainly oranges are something that will pull in orioles, as well as nectar. That's certainly something that they'll cue in on. So why? I'm not sure. You know, I mean, it seemed to me that they're probably not necessarily breeding in that area, but so they may have moved on, but it's hard to say. They're not necessarily fully predictable.
No, they certainly are. Well, tell us more about your job. You're director of community conservation. What does that all entail?
Yeah, so I have, I think probably the best job in the country. So I've been with Audubon about 9 years now, and my job really is to help our vast network that I mentioned of chapters and centers really work more effectively to achieve conservation goals in their local communities. And, you know, it's based on our understanding that where birds thrive, people prosper. And so we really do want to create more bird-friendly communities that allow both our native bird species to succeed, but also to allow those communities then to be more better for humans and birds alike. So one of the things that I obviously focus on are native plants, because that's a very solid way that people can both provide, you know, habitat for birds, but also make their communities, again, better for humans. And doing everything that we can to actually make our communities better for birds. And so the built environment can be a challenge for birds. We've already talked a little bit about wind farms and both their structure and then the light at night. But actually, our buildings can be a challenge for birds. Both night lights are a challenge for migratory birds. Songbirds are generally night migrators, and so light can be very distracting to them during their night migration, both in spring and fall. So turning lights out during those sensitive periods can be a benefit. And then also reflective surfaces and transmitting surfaces during the day can be very confusing to birds. And we're probably all familiar with birds hitting our windows. And so actually providing ways that people can modify those things so that they're more friendly to birds is something that we do as well.
Let's take some more calls here. Judy in Appleton, your turn now. Judy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a lilac tree, not a lilac bush, in my front yard, and I have some cardinals nesting in it right now, and they're building nests, and they keep taking stuff in there. And I don't have bird seed out or anything. What could I feed a cardinal?
All right.
Well, congratulations. It's always nice to have a bird building a home in your yard. I would say that, you know, again, cardinals are going to be looking for those caterpillars to feed their young. That's obviously nothing that you need to provide. And probably, I would imagine, in Appleton in this type of time of year, that there's going to be plenty of resources for those birds to forage on. So I would do a few things. You know, water is an important source. So Larry mentioned he has a bird bath. Water is always important for birds. And so if you have that, they'll certainly take advantage of that. And then one of the other things that we would encourage is for people to keep their pets indoors, cats and dogs. Obviously, dogs go outdoors, and so you don't need to necessarily keep them indoors at all times. But cats indoors is really an important thing, because those can be pretty strong predators of our native bird species. And so doing those sorts of things will really help your just ensuring that they'll have a great chance at actually getting those chicks to fledge.
And in long term, you know, you can provide maybe service berries. I'm trying to think of plants that attract cardinals, but that's, I believe, one plant that is a good one to put maybe in your yard. Try some other plants. That go to that website, go to the National Audubon Society, and look at their native plant database and plug in your zip code, Judy, and you're going to find a whole bunch of plants. That and actually, if you want cardinals, to keep attracting cardinals, there'll be a whole bunch of plant species there that would attract cardinals. So, and other birds, of course, as well. So there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Gail in Fish Creek, we turn to you next. Hi, Gail.
Hi, thanks for getting to my call. Hey, we have attracted Bohemian waxwing.
Oh.
We had a half a dozen of them, and we have not had them up until last winter.
And what did you do to attract? Did you do anything to attract them?
Well, we have been over the years, our service berries trees have been getting bigger, and we have planted more berry trees, you know, Purple Prince and different ones around on the property. So they have enough for that sustains them for the winter and when they first show up. And we saw these little guys, and they were in the snow. And I researched and found out they were the Bohemian waxwing with the little red on the top and just gorgeous, playing in the snow. It was so cute. So we've got them up in Fish Creek, so we'll see if I get more, because I get a lot of the waxwings. Look, I can count 60 of those.
Oh, my
goodness.
Bohemian
waxwings at one time in the spring when they show up. And they're beautiful. But the more service berry trees we plant, I think the more we're going to have.
Oh, that's a great story, isn't it, John?
Absolutely. Congratulations. That's great. And, you know, service berries are really good plants, but, you know, for waxwings and other berry eating species. So congratulations. And that's absolutely, they're such gorgeous birds. You know, one of my favorites.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Gail, for calling. Appreciate your call. And John, here we are about out of time. Thank you so much. Again, tell people how to find that site.
Sure. All they need to do is go to our website, audubon.org, audubon.org, and then Plants for Birds is highlighted on the website. Go to that, and it will take you to the database. All you need is your zip code, and you can find out about native plants and get connected through to your local Audubon that can support you. And we really welcome everybody. Everybody everywhere can dig in with us on this program.
Yeah. John, thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. Hope we have a chance to talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Larry.
John Roden is Director of Community Conservation for the National Audubon Society. And I tell you, you got to go to that database. It is a really cool website. It's a native plant database. It's part of the Audubon website. And just type in your zip code, and you are going to find. And if you want a specific bird, you can type that in, too. But just your zip code will put you in touch with all the plants that will attract, the native plants that will attract birds to your area. Well, we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk with you about hunting. And Americans always haven't always hunted for sport, but today we'll take a look at the history of hunting in this country with our next guest, Philip Dre. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.